what triggered this bizarre behavior.
Journey into the cold heart of Northern Darkness with Nordic Crimes.
That case became like a scene from a horror movie.
A new true crime documentary series that chilled the bone.
The hunger for killing is increasing in the course of these homicides.
Listen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Nordic Crimes is a part of the Acast family.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hi everyone, don't worry, the next episode is coming along as per the schedule, so this is just a little bonus. I hope that you enjoyed the Donnellys. I've been getting a lot of good feedback about Nate Henley's research, and quite a few descendants of the family have also messaged me. It's been super interesting. I've also been hearing about some of the crazy stories that have morphed about this case throughout the years, well, the decades. In any event, I first covered this case last summer as part of a live show I did in Toronto with some friends. We invited Nate Henley up to talk about some other things related to the case, and then we were joined by criminologist Lee Meller, who joined us to talk about the case from his unique and educated perspective. Also, in this audio, you'll hear me, Jordan from Nighttime, and Aaron from the Generation Y. So enjoy this little bonus audio, and I'll see you soon with the next episode. It is one of the craziest and most complicated cases I've ever covered, and it will be a three-parter. See you soon.
So you know this case inside out, Nate. The first question I want to ask you is, I've always, like, every time I've ever heard of this story, I've heard it referred to as the Black Donnellys, but it looks as though in present day there's a move to refer to it simply as the Donnellys. What's the reason for the name change?
Well, the name change, like, there's been sort of this historic thing. Part of it is just simply, like, the Donnellys is sort of, you know, more descriptive, just simply, this is the family, this is the Donnellys. The actual term, like, there's an article here from London Free Press, 1880, and it talks about origin of the term Blackfeet. And it has a quote from here. A gentleman explained to me that the term Blackfeet is more applicable to the Donnellys themselves than to the Vigilance Committee, as one would suppose upon reading articles, blah, blah, blah. And then it talks about the Blackfeet and the Whitefeet and all this. I suspect, too, and this is just speculation, one question that I used to get constantly where people would say, well, does that mean they were black? And I'd say, well, no, they were Irish. And it got into this you know, confusing kind of thing. There's also the term Black Irish, which is sort of a bit of an antiquated expression, which used to refer to Irish people with dark hair. And so it just sort of got a bit confusing that there was a time in history where it was common to refer to someone, the Black Joneses or the Black, you know, whatever, meaning sort of is a synonym for evil and bad. And, you know, there's obviously sort of a move away from that. So that's sort of, That's a rather roundabout explanation, but I think that sort of, it, just shortening it to Donnelly's, I think fits a more modern viewpoint, I guess, makes sense. You could say.
And also it really became about the family, right? So it was just the Donnellys became their own entity. It wasn't about a gang anymore. It wasn't about which side they were. It was the family.
Right. It's somewhat like saying, you know, the evil Hell's Angels or something. You don't really need to, you know, you just say Hell's Angels. You don't really need to precede it with evil.
The hell part doesn't do that?
That might be a hint.
I just wanted to ask you both, Nate and Lee, the massacre took place in 1880, and there's been plenty of other crimes from that period that have been completely forgotten. What is it about this particular case where it's like the big Canadian case? Why has it resonated with people over the years, over the decades?
Well, I'll speak first to that. Lee has more of the history of, you know, mass murder, serial killer things. My perspective was that it lingered because it was such an out-of-place crime for the time that we tend to associate vigilantism, vigilance committees, and basically lynching, because that essentially is what happened to the Donnelly family. Some of the early newspaper coverage explicitly said they were lynched. We tend to associate that with United States, like Texas, New Mexico, Wild West. And we think of our own pioneer background. We always stress, you know, oh, the Mounties and these good, hardy pioneers who worked hard and kept their noses clean. So it seems so out of place for Southern Ontario. I think that is one reason it's resonated today. And I'll pass the conch to Lee.
Yeah, and I think that that's a bit of a misconception when you think of Canada.
Very much so.
Historically. I mean, this was a... has a brutal history, this country as well. And what I'd like to comment on, which I find particularly interesting about this case, is we have, there's now sort of three types of cultures, but I'll just refer to two. There's honor culture, and that's still prevalent in most of the world, this idea of honor culture. And then we have what is more of a 20th century, beginning in the 19th century, concept of dignity culture. Now, in the places where the Donnellys came from, like in Ireland and the countryside, in Scotland and in many other places, and particularly in the Wild West, like you're mentioning New Mexico, Texas, there wasn't really strong law enforcement and government control over these places. So people had to have a reputation. They, like, your honor meant something. Your reputation literally could ruin you or make you in a society. So people would take things like a little slight. I'll give you an example, actually. This goes back to New York. You've probably heard of Alexander Hamilton and his famous duel that he was killed in. Right? This is 18th century. People would duel over things like being called a rascal. Right? That we're going to fight to the death because you called me a rascal, which just sounds absurd now, because we live more in a dignity culture now where it's like sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. But that was not the old way. And the idea that someone would refer to you as a rascal, it's like saying you cannot be trusted. You know, you are not a man of your word. You're dishonorable. And this would have real social repercussions for you. And so in places, this was, honor culture was pretty much the norm culture across the world. And it started to change around this time in the 19th century. But it was still very prevalent on the frontier, whether it was the United States or in Canada. And so you have people coming from Ireland, Scotland, places where there's already a kind of clannish honor culture, and they're bringing it to a place where there is weak local law enforcement. And this is why this violence is kind of erupting there, is because it does matter, your reputation. And what I found really interesting is this idea that the Donnellys had this reputation for being worse than they were. And, you know, we would think, well, that's a bad thing. But they probably, in some ways, really relished in that. And the reason is because it keeps people from screwing with you, right? We all know that you can even see little bits of it, remnants of it in day-to-day Canadian life. Maybe not so much in Toronto, but now go out to, like, where I grew up. You know, you've got that guy with the mullet who wants to, you know, he gets really pissed off at you because you bumped into him in a bar or something like that, right? You're just like, it's okay, just calm down. That's still that remnant of honor culture there. So I think that it was to, you know, very much to the benefit of them to have that reputation. And the funny thing is, when they start to turn to the dignity culture, which is, you know what, we're going to let the law handle this, that's when they start to slip. That's when they start to seem vulnerable, because it's not just the Black Donnellys in that community that have the honor culture values. It's everyone else in the community, too. And then you go into the, were you taking us to court? I think I smell weakness and what happens soon after. So I think that in one way, that's a way of interpreting what's happening there and why it happened. But this transference during the 19th century in Canada from an honor culture to a dignity culture, which we arguably live in now. I won't get any deeper than that. But I think that that could be a reason why it lingers in the popular imagination, is it actually marks a tangible cultural shift in Canadian Canada.
And just to very quickly echo what Lee said, a reminder too that, yeah, Canadian pioneer life was a lot more violent than it's typically portrayed in, you know, TV shows or, you know, school books and stuff. Obviously, stuff like the Donnelly Massacre was pretty unusual, but there was, like, plenty of fist fighting and drunken brawls and people shooting at each other. Even after, by the way, even after the Donnellys were murdered in 1880, there were still cases in that area of some pretty crazy stuff. And not all involving the Donnellys. So,
one thing I'm curious about is I have never heard really about modern day ancestors and, you know, the locations that these stories have taken place. In your research, Nate, have you come across kind of a modern day descendants of the Donnellys?
Well, interesting enough that you mentioned that. When I was looking into that, there was an article just this summer, Barrie Today magazine, or Barrie Today Online, that there's a Donnelly Museum now. So just to quickly backtrack, the town of Lucan for decades kind of kept a very tight lid on this story. They were not too eager to talk about it. So for years and years and years, it was kind of almost forgotten. There weren't really any full books on the story written until the 50s. So it was only very recently that the town of Lucan has kind of sort of realized, well, you know, maybe we can make a little money from this. You know, people do visit the Tower of London, and some terrible things took place there. So there's now a Donnelly Museum. And this article from June 21st of this year said, the Donnelly Museum has brought together descendants of the original Donnelly family. That they use this sort of as an excuse to get together. The great-grandchildren of the famous Black Donnellys, there they use the old name, including Mark Newman, great-great-grandson of Patrick Donnelly. And there's a few others who are named here that I won't go into. Oh, Jim Cameron, who was a great-grandson of Will Donnelly. And they all got together at this museum just to sort of hang out. And many of them didn't know each other. Because I think when something this horrendous happens to your family, there's maybe a temptation not to have family reunions after that. It's, I mean, well, seriously, I mean, not to, you know, be facetious, but obviously you could see how this could destroy a family long after, you know, the bodies were buried in the ground. So, yes, there are still descendants around. I cannot name them all off the top of my head, but this was a very interesting piece, just saying how this museum has brought back these descendants who all sort of decided to get together and for the first time sort of, wow, okay, let's all meet and talk with each other. So it's interesting how the resurgence of interest in the Donnelly murders has somehow sparked a renewal of the family members getting together.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.